With that, let me begin officially. It's 9:05. I was looking at that clock. That clock is a drop fast today. May 23rd, 2016. I welcome everyone here. Time is ticking away. We're fighting the passage of time, but that's par for the course. But at least on this level of teaching, wherever I leave off is where I pick up next time. Now, the question, last week's share, again, I thanked everyone yesterday. It was very moving. So many people thanked me for the share. I don't know what was so great about it. To me, it was Zil Krei Bei Rav, it was axiomatic. But before I go further with this share, I want to mention something about Jay Solomon, something very, very fascinating, which Jay doesn't even realize how fascinating it is. Jay Solomon has purchased a number of items at auction. Years ago, he purchased the invitation to the to Mori Rebbe's wedding with Tanya Levitt. And the first thing he did, which I credit him, I think you paid $900 for it, if I recall. You don't remember. To me, it was a tremendous sum of money. The first thing he did was lent it to me to copy, which I always appreciated. And I wanted to publish it in the Rav, but Tova told me it's too personal. So I held back. You understand? Anything, I can't offend the Soloveitchik family. You have to understand my feelings. So Jay purchased a letter. Let me see if I should have a copy here. No, I don't have a copy. You have the copy. The copy you gave me, I put into my files. So show the class here the copy. And you purchase a letter. What's very fascinating, here's the original letter. What's very fascinating about the letter is... the people who had it and sold it, you can see that someone went through the letter and tried to understand the Rub's handwriting. There's another handwriting on top, trying to understand it. So Jay came to me, and Ani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, I was able to read every word in the letter. The one word I couldn't read, Malka helped me, and we got it. So I have a perfect copy for you. You can have it printed out, and you can publicize it, because you gave me another letter that you got off of some website, and the person responsible for that letter, and the one who I worked on, it took me days to work that letter out. You're looking at the person. They sent it to me when Rebbetzin Miriam Shiloh died. Zichrona Tzadeket Lebracha, her husband sent me the original, a copy of the original letter from the Rebbe. She wrote to the Rebbe, it's not for now, but I cry when I think of it. She wrote to the Rebbe after the 67 war, where she was teaching in a high school and they just studied Kol Dodi Dofek. And she said, how can it be that the man who wrote and issued the kuntris Kol Dodi Dofek does not come in Aliyah? And she hit the Rav hard. The Rav wrote back the most beautiful love of Israel letter you will ever see to her. Jay has it if you want it, and I wrote it out, and I had, it was typed here in this building, and when we had four secretaries I could lean on them today. I have to pray for the one secretary's well-being, Sherry. So I printed it out, and it was publicized all over the world. I quote it, actually, in the Rav, if I'm not mistaken. Tova Lichtenstein said, you got it. I said to Tova, I take the letter with a grain of salt. I said it, and she said to me, a big grain of salt. You understand? Because the Rav's letter there makes Rav Kook look like a lightweight with religious Zionism. Now, this letter is very simple, but you'll see in a second why it's so important to us. The Rebbe is writing to Chaim Moshe Shapiro, Moshe Chaim Shapiro. The name mean anything to you? When I came in Aliyah, he was the most important leader of the Mizrahi. He was of Yudapesha origins. His brother was a big Rosh Yeshiva here, quite right wing. And his brother would say about Chaim Moshe that considering the way he was raised in Bnei Akiva and activist and, you know, all that went with it, coming in Aliyah, my brother turned out okay. Because he was the leader of Mizrahi, and a bit of a Talmud Chacham, Yerei Shamayim, the old generation of Mizrahi people. So he evidently wrote to the Rav that someone had pledged, what was the sum? I think it was $50,000 to the Mizrahi. So he wrote to the Rav, when will we get the money? So the Rav writes back to him and gives him tremendous titles, Kavod Yedidi, Harav HaGadol, Harifu Boki, Sina V'yokahora, Mishesh Galot, Kabarnint, Hayahadut HaCharedit, Ma'alat U'Kvodom, Harav Rav Meisha Shapira Sheyichya, Shalom Uvracha. Those are, wow. And the Rebbe is telling him that the man who gave the money just came to see me, and I asked him about the money, and he told me, he pledged, told Eshkol, he's giving $2.5 million for the Keren HaTarbut, it must be of the Jewish agency, to teach Judaism all over the world. And in that Keren Tarbut of $2.5 million, he is including $50,000 has to be subvented to Mizrahi, and the Rav will ask him again to be sure that Mizrahi gets the money. Gentlemen, it can only be, again, when it comes to guessing the past, I have a doctorate from Bernard Verville Graduate School. I will never say I'm 100% correct, but Josh, bon appetit, I am 99% correct. New Jay, who are we talking about? Of course, you're sitting in the Gris Kollel. This letter is about Mr. Gris. It could only be Joe Gris. Who had that money? Who gave that money? Who was a Zionist? Who helped build the Israeli Museum? Who built this campus for the Rav? Who had that type of money? And who would come to see the Rav? Who was a chassid of the Rav? So I want to tell you, that letter ties right in with where we're sitting, which, and you did well to buy the letter, but this is the original I'm holding. What I would tell you is you have to have it framed. Don't let it be handled around. Okay, I'm handling it nicely, but be careful with it. Okay. I also want to mention last week's class for Baron Lichtenstein and his Hesped for the Lubavitcher Rebbe asks exactly a similar question to what I asked. How come everyone says the Rebbe could have been Mashiach, was Mashiach, is Mashiach, and no one will say that about the Rav, about Rav Moshe, about Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky? And he goes in the Hesped, he doesn't deal with it the way I deal with it, the difference between Hasidic Shevel to the Litvish Shevel. But he says, look what they accomplished. Each one accomplished something, the Litvish Gedolim, but it was very limited. The Lubavitcher Rebbe accomplished in every field imaginable. So he goes in, it's a very nice Hesped. To a certain degree, it parallels what we've said in class. Now, so what I spoke about last week, and I made the comparison to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and Bitachon and Hishtatlut, and the Chafetz Chaim opening the windows every morning, and yet a kid, if you're going to tell a kid, open the window every morning, Mashiach could be there. No, after a while, he's going to be very disappointed and very upset. And then he'll get involved with some of the Mizrahi people, some of the people here, and he'll heal people, like I told you, the Yom Kippur War, Mashiach is around the corner, Milchemet Gog u'Magog. And then when it didn't work out that way, how do we strike that happy balance? And that's what I said. I mean, it's not easy to give a black and white answer. It's not a survey, the Pooh survey or the surveys they have here, Hanukkah Smith. Everyone wants to know, are you happy with Lieberman? Are you happy that Yalon is out? If you read the newspapers over the weekend, everyone is surveying. I don't know, I can't believe in these surveys. You ask 1,000 people. There's 7 million people in the country. Maybe 5 million have the ability to vote. There's 4.5 million. You have to be over 18 to vote. 4.5, 5 million vote. All right, all the surveys. But how do you strike a balance? 40%, 60%, 70%, 30%. And the truth is, it's a very individualistic answer. And this is part of life. There's some people who have more bitachon than others. Some people hishtatlut. Some, yeah, I understand. It's your personality. It's your makeup. None of us have the same genes. None of us have the same chromosomes. None of us have the same psychological, mental makeup. It's an individualistic matter. And this comes back to chinuch, to being a rebbe, to being a public figure who people look up to. The greatest gift the Rav gave me was the fact that there's multiplicity, that we can't force everyone to look the same, dress the same. We have to allow for self-expression. And there's no black and white answer. Someone can have more bitachon. In my life, I've had more bitachon than hishtatlot. I could have taken positions with famous titles. I would have been a president, a chancellor, a Rosh Yeshiva. I could have been a Chaver Knesset. No limit to all the office I got. But I would have never known what I know today. I can't say on a Lamdin. I apologize to Harry Merrillis, who describes me in such glowing terms. I thank you, Rabbi Merrillis. I have to live up to what you're saying, as I said yesterday. But you'll see yesterday's shiur, he made reference. You'll see it kicks off and gets me involved what happened in Jerusalem. It's exactly what we spoke about. So I've tried to become a Lamdim. I've tried to be a Yirei Shemayim. I've tried to be a Chassid. I've tried to be a Tzaddik. All right, more bitachon than hishtadlut. You can ask my wife, absolutely. It's individualistic. On the other hand, someone took a position, Rosh Yeshiva, Nasi, Chancellor, he made a good living. He had food for the fourth Shabbos of the month, but he didn't achieve what I achieved in learning and knowledge and Baruch Hashem. So it's an individual. Now, but yet let's come back to the Chafetz Chaim. And here I want to reveal a story. I'm trying to get out of my system every little story I've seen in my life that describes an era. And let me tell you a story. When I was a kid in the yeshiva, we looked up to, I would say there were three people who towered above everyone else. One, of course, was the Beib, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. One was Reb Gershon Sadowski, not Slidowski, but Sadowski. Do you remember him yet in your time? Ugh.
The Slidowski had daughters at Machon Gold.
It's the same family? That's Slidowski, with an L. No, this is Sadowski. He has children living here. Was he a Lamdin? He and Aaron were the stars. And then, of course, when Duvi Hartman came in from Lakewood, he was, a ball of fire. So one, I hope I remember it correctly, but a lot of the story I know I have correct. I'm going back many, many years now, 60 years or more. And so one Boston Duvi spent in Rosh Hashanah Yom, he spent in Boston. So Duvi came back all inspired about the Rav. I mean, if someone would have said to me what Hartman would become and what his attitude to the Rav would be, and he would even print it, even though a guy named Rakef had pleaded with him not to print such gross words about his Rebbe, and I got nowhere. They would have said, what are you crazy? Duvi Hartman at Tzadik Yesod Olam. He came back from Boston. And he said, the Rav, they blew shofar in Boston. It was a sight to see. The Rav used the stopwatch. Now, is that true that the No. So what I think he meant when he said the Rav used the stopwatch, he would look at a watch, and as the seconds ticked away, he signaled the Baal Tekiya went to stop. And we were talking, the Rav, what I'd say. Now, this was the Rav with his diktuk and mitzvah, with his briska, chumrezah, if I may use that word. And giddy, we were flabbergasted. So then we asked Duvi a question. And this question is a powerful question. Duvi, that's what the Rav did? Tell me. What is he, off the wall? Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. Every Jew should do this? And Duvi answered, it was his answer, no, we have to live normally, but you need in a generation somebody like the Rav. The Rav is the Rav. We have to be inspired, but we have to live normally. It's exactly my approach to the Chafetz Chaim. I think it's very bad chinuch to tell a Torah Shraga kid. You're going to tell a Torah Shraga kid that, Danny, you're a madrich, right? You're going to tell a Torah Shraga kid, open the window shade every morning and look if Mashiach is here. No, but you have to tell a kid, in every generation, they got Einim and Tzaddikim who do look at the window shade. That was the Chafetz Chaim. I love Dovi's answer. All right? And I have to give credit. Think about it. We have to live normal. You have to teach a kid Mashiach. We look for Mashiach. You have to say the Yud Gimel Ikarim. But you have to go about your work, your goal, your quests. Mashiach is not here. When you've done everything you can, then that bitachon kicks in. One day we'll be privileged. This will come out, you'll see, when I'm going to quote sources on the... Very interesting, but we'll get there in a few minutes. Now, this is the way I approach it, and I love Dovi's answer. We have to live normally, but in every generation, we need someone like the Rav, who's going to blow shofar, following it with a clock, with the seconds, what he called the stopwatch, all right? That was the week. Did you daven with the Rav on Rosh Hashanah? No, you were never. Where did you daven?
In Young Israel.
Because that was closer to your house. And Jay, did you daven with the Rav?
Many.
Yeah, and how did they blow shofar?
Well,
Who blew?
In the early days, Shlomo Wolgemuth blew. Rabbi Wolgemuth's son.
Okay.
And then he was succeeded by a fellow named Litwig, who was a professional trumpeter. He was a very large man.
Wow.
It was like listening to, it was extraordinary.
Yeah.
And then he passed away, unfortunately, and I believe Henry Furstein took over.
Henry, and did the Rav look at his watch? Was it
he looked at his watch
and he said...
I know that he met with the Baal Tzokeiach.
Before? Okay, so now I can tell you, Abraham Soloveitchik had the same shtick. You know who blew for him? David Applebaum. And there were Rosh Hashanahs when David went back to Chicago just to blow for his Rebbe. I mean, it hurts to think of the... But the best are taken by the Rebbe Shalom. Okay? The best. David, we can't forget. Although Chazal say, Atid ha-meit l'shtakeach min ha-lev, David, I always say every Chazal is correct, but there's always going to be one exception, and David is the exception there. Can't get him out of my mind. My dear friends, how do I know I'm right? How do I know I'm right? This whole approach I took last week, this whole approach to messianicism and bitachon and hishtadlut in relation to redemption and eschatological vision. How do I know I'm right? It's an open Rambam. And this, of course, is the most important Rambam you can ever touch on this very topic. Hilchot Melachim, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Bet. I've quoted it so many times in so many different contexts. And the Rambam, I don't want to read the whole Rambam to you. You can look at it later. And the Rambam describes the ultimate redemption, how it will come about, and Eliyahu HaNavi, and what will come first, what will come last, then he refers to the Gemara in Chelek, and the Machlakot between the Amorayim, and finally the Rambam says, Uliolam lo yas yitasek adam bedivrei ha'agadot v'lo yarich bedivrei midrashot ha'amurim b'yanim elu kiyotze b'hem v'lo yasimim ikar she'eno meviim lo lidei ahava v'lo lidei yira. And he says, don't get involved in trying to think and to work out and how will it happen exactly. There is so much contradiction, and the beautiful words of the Rambam, we're not going to know until it actually happens. We have to live it. We have to have faith. These are the basic concepts that we have to have. But ultimately, we will not know Eich Yiyu Ad SheYihiyu.
Wow.
And then the Rambam, the most famous words, V'lo yachshov hakitzim, and don't try to figure out, and by the way, there are achronim, very famous, fine Jews, who try to figure out the exact years. Those years have passed by. Don't get involved with that. And then he quotes the Gemara, you can get all the sources, it's all in Chelek, then I'll say Kalim. Omru chachamim, tipach daitan. Or there's another reading, tipach Ruchan shel mechashvei kitzim. Anyone who tries to figure it out and tries to tell you it's going to happen exactly like this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, know for sure. One reason, one expression is in the Gemara, he should lose his mind, become senile. Another expression, he should just drop dead. Pardon me for saying it. Tipach Ruchan. The Rambam. Ela yechaker v'yamin b'klal hadavarim kimo shebianu. This is such a magnificent, important Rambam. And that's the way we have to go. Now, I'll tell you about this Rambam. If I told you this story, I've told it many times in public. But believe me, I've held audiences in the army spellbound once I told the story. If I told it, stop me, I don't want to waste time. But I'll tell you the story. 1976, I believe it was. Let me just think for a minute that I have it right. 1976, correct. I have it all in Washington. It's researched properly. I finally was called up for basic training. What happened was, until the Yom Kippur War, they didn't touch Americans because there was a problem. America didn't want anyone to serve in a foreign army if you had an American passport. So Israel, as a gesture to America, did not bother Anglos who came from the United States. After the Yom Kippur War, which until today, there's no way to explain how we survived except to quote Rabbi Shtisel, Chastei Hashem, they drafted all. Anyone who could walk upright on two legs under the age of 39. So I got called up right away, and each time I get called up and I get a cancellation, of course, in order to take someone I was already on in years, you had to have a group of people your age with in your health status. So I called up, canceled. Finally, Tina Desta, 76. That's it, my group. And we all meet in Rehov Rashi, Yerushalayim. I knew right away it's going to be a very different experience because these are Yerushalmiyim, a lot of Rabbanim, people I taught with, people I knew. And right away the Chabatnikim pulled out tefillin, and while the people are waiting, they're walking up and down. Did you put on tefillin today? And you know, the Sfardim are all traditional. The minute you offer them a chance to put on tefillin, they all jump today. Many of them are from, but this is before Shas and Rav Avadja and the whole Baal Tshuva movement. And it was just an experience. All right, then we get to Basis Hadracha Abba, Bad Arba, famous. Doesn't exist today. It was in Bethel. Today there's a community there. Then it was an old Jordanian army base. So, all right, we're in basic. It was real basic for people our age. We woke up at 5. We were active all day. They keep you running. Unbelievable experience. But the cursing. Oh my gosh, what we heard around us. English, there's no Hebrew curse words. I told you more than once. The Hebrew curse words you hear are all Ben Nida, Ben Zona. Those are halachic concepts. A kid says that. You got to start learning with him. A sugya in Ketuvah, a sugya in Kedushin, a sugya in Yevamot. All right, but the curse words in Russian, Arabic, English, I can curse in Baruch Hashem. Three different languages. Let it stand at that. So I developed a way to curse and to study Torah at the same time. And all you have to do is quote this Rambam. Tipach Rucham Shel Mechashvei Kitzim. And the commander yells, Rakefet, Makama Malel. What are you, Malel? How do you say that in English? Murmuring, mumbling. Kvot HaMefaked, Ani Lomei Torah, Yafeh, Tamshich, Tipach Rucham. You look him right in the face, maybe. You then, whenever I get lectured in the army, by the way, this never really happened, but to take it at face value, I mean, I, the truth of the matter is, if you know the story of my basic training, I became a hero, the whole story, it's all in Washington. I gave that Russia many times. What happened, it's not important now. But whenever I would lecture in the army, new 200 soldiers are sitting there. There's this American guy, they say he's a rabbi, no beard, no payas, just wearing an army uniform like everyone else, and that American accent, who the heck is he? So the minute I would begin, I'd say, Chayalim Yekarim, Ani rotze lelameid etchem patent miyuchad sheli. Eich lekalel et hamafakeid v'lilmol tara b'yeit uvona achat. The minute you begin that way, 200 people jump forward. Oh my, then I tell the Rambam. From that point on, I had the audience eating out of my hands. So, you see, that Rambam is overwhelming. We're not going to know how it will be until we live it. And by the way, this is what I tell all the Jews alive today, who are anti-Zionist, anti-this, anti-that. I don't have to elaborate. You all know what goes on. First of all, if you're an anti-Zionist, you're an anachronism. Zionism does not exist today. Show me one Zionist in the world, okay? Paris is a Zionist. Weizmann was a Zionist. Ruby Rivlin. There's a reality. There's a state of Israel today. So you're anti-Israel, you're anti-me. The state is us, it's a democracy. Come live here, make it better, solve your problems. That's number one. Number two, you're an Amoritz, you're born, any you're a Chet, you're missing one Rambam. Look, and by the way, you should know, I told this to Satma Hasidim, they look at the Rambam, they're so, Amharatzitro, it dances today. They never saw this Rambam. They look at the Rambam. If someone is honest, it opens his eyes. You're not going to know till you live it, till it happens. And is this a farce? We're on to 7 million Jews living in Israel. Just think for a minute. I spoke a year ago on Yom HaTzmut when we passed 6 million. So I spoke in a shul where there are a lot of survivors. I said 6 million. People were in tears. You got to make that connection. Today already we're well over 6 million halachic Jews. We're not talking America. In America, if you have 3 million halachic Jews, you're doing well. I don't think you have that many halachic Jews. Here we have over 6 million. All right, we have a few hundred thousand Russians who are between two worlds. Rabbi Rubin had a very difficult case. I cry when I think of it. A girl was learning to convert, and she seemed sincere. Am I describing it correctly? And she has an Israeli boyfriend who's not from, and he won't, they're not going to be from, and how can he go and convert her, take her to Basin? And he told her, I'd like to meet your boyfriend. And there was no response. She gave up all of Yiddishkeit for this Israeli guy who couldn't care less. And you know what happened with Weizmann. Everyone knows this. Israeli commentators, TV personalities, they're leaving, not with Weizmann, with Lieberman, they're leaving the country. No, Rakefet wants to publish an ad to all those leaving the country because Avigdor Liebman has become the Minister of Defense. Rakefet will arrange for his students to carry your mizvadot, your suitcases, to the airplane. So you see, it's a very powerful Rambam. And if you live with this Rambam, you can't get upset, you can't have tension. And then I have other shurim, it's not for now. Why Dafka, the whole Zionist movement, had to come about through Herzl. It's an open Midrash Rabbah. And Baruch Hashem, we're here. Look at this. And now there's a president of a whole tribe in Africa, 9 million people. They claim they're Jews. The president wears a yarmulke. It was written up the weekend papers. Look into Makor Rishon. 2 weeks ago, he wears a yarmulke. He wears tzitzit, an intelligent-looking man. He's coming to Israel. They all, like, could you imagine 9 million Africans, what this would do to the country? Ribbono shel Olam, just think. And from there, from the 10 lost tribes. So that Rambam is very powerful. And I stand on firm ground. Let's go further. Many months ago, we discovered our friend Jerome Mintz. It's a very interesting story, the little bit we uncovered about Jerome Mintz. Here's a kid from Brooklyn, totally assimilated, no different than Bernie Sanders, who's also from Brooklyn. He just, if you're up to date in the news, he just came out that the Democrats should have in their platform to give more money to the Palestinians. I mean, it's beyond words who Bernie Sanders is. B'nai Korach lo metu. And there's a kid from Brooklyn who was a great expert in Spanish culture, did a doctorate, a professor at a Midwestern university, Jewish origins. Somehow he got interested in Hasidim and he wrote two very fascinating books about Hasidim in America. He has a very interesting chapter in the second book, Jerome Mintz, Hasidic People, A Place in the New World, chapter 28. Now, what makes this chapter so fascinating is it's towards the end of the Rebbe's life and he's dealing with the messianic problem which already is being talked about in the 1980s. Now, why did it become a topic of comment in the 1980s? It's very simple. First of all, the Rebbe was approaching the age of 90. Remember that the Rebbe was born 1 year before the Rebbe. Their lives parallel each other. The Rebbe was born in 1903. The Rebbe was born in 1902. The Rebbe stopped functioning, lo aleinu, by 1985, totally stopped functioning. The Rebbe had a number of more good years, and then, of course, the strokes overtook him and heart trouble. The Rebbe died in 93. The Rebbe died in 94, if I'm not mistaken. Their lives paralleled each other. The Rebbe had no children. So right away you face a dead end. The Rebbe can't die. There's no successor. No, it raises the messianic issue. The other part, of course, was the Rebbe's age. Kol Zman, you'll see what a chassid says, very insightful, quoted in the chapter, we'll get to it. But Kol Zman, the Rebbe is 50, 60. No one is thinking of death. The issue doesn't arise. But there's a certain reality. I see today, whoever sends me, contacts me, they go, Rebbe, you should only have good health, your good health continue. No one said that to me 10 years ago. All right, it's a function of life. So by the time the Rebbe is well into his 80s, and remember, he already had a heart attack on Simchas Torah years before in his 70s, late 70s. The issue now comes up. We also have to remember that the Hasidic movement, this one I spoke about a few lectures ago, there always was a Hasidic, in the Hasidic movement, there always was a messianic tension that did not exist in the Litvish Welt. We spoke about this. So Chabad was not unique in that respect. The Munkacher, remember what I showed you, he wanted a crown Messiah right here in Yerushalayim. Of course, the Hasidim were not stupid. They learned from Shabtai Tzvi that if you actually declare someone to be Mashiach and he's not Mashiach, you're going to have a tremendous disappointment. They never went out and declared anyone absolutely Mashiach. But the messianic tension was there. And he quotes an interview with a Rishon LeChassid, and this is interesting, you know, with sociologists. This is what makes Gershon Kranzler's book on Williamsburg so important, because they interview people. Interviewing people gives you a pulse of life. You see, when you do research, 100 years later, say, I'm researching my cousin's life, Rabbi Revel. All right. I'm dependent upon documents. I'm dependent upon interpreting documents, underlying the word interpretation. I see people today do research on the Rav who didn't know the Rav, who never saw the Rav, who never spoke to the Rav. And you know, that I told you, I was interviewed, a lady did a doctorate in Hebrew Yiddish. She got her doctorate on the Rav and Hafkat Kedushin, that whole issue. And she interviewed me. And I couldn't believe what other people told her about the Rav's attitude. And in her final doctorate, she quotes me as one of many others with various interpretations of what the Rav was saying about Hafkat Kedushin. I have to tell you, it's off the wall. I know exactly what the Rav held, exactly what the Rav said. I black and white. But people are interpreting. What's good when you have interviews with people who lived it, these are living people. Yes, they see it through their own prisma, but it gives you an absolutely honest feeling what was going on in life. And he interviews this chassid. There is a Rishon tradition that Mashiach will only come from the house of Rishon, because Rishon is descended from Malchut Beit David. The first Rishon Rebbe had a Yichus Briv. He translates it, family tree portrait, which traced his ancestry to Rashi, and Rashi is a direct descendant of King David. Then there was a fire, and the Yichus Briv was burned to pacify his family and Hasidim. The Rishon said, from now on, the Yichus will come from me. And Rishon believed that Mashiach Tzidkenu, but they never said who. The Rishon Rabbeim until today, endless, the Biyana Rebbe perhaps, who ate in my house, the Biyana Rebbe is perhaps the central figure in Rishon today. The Biyana Rebbe, the Sadegora Rebbe, it's interesting, both are native English speakers. The Sadegora Rebbe is from America, then he was in England, now he came in Aliyah when his father died to take his father's place. The Biyana Rebbe is as American as baked beans, as apple pie, as blueberry pie. It's fascinating. Or Nekenda Malacha, he's a very good Rebbe. I only wish that he would have the guts to break with Agudat Yisrael and embrace religious Zionism, as many Rishona Einik Lach did, b'lev v'nefesh. But that's my personal opinion and prejudice. Forget it. What's important is Rishon is Rishon. But when you talk to Chabad today, the Chabadnikim, the coming of the Messiah is not a far-off thing. Our children talk about the Messiah all the time. They sing, let the Messiah come now. If something is scheduled for 3 weeks away, they say, God forbid, only if Mashiach isn't here by then. Now, this takes us back to the question we raised earlier today. Is this a good approach? I personally would not take such an approach for various obvious reasons. What? It's overstating the imminence of Mashiach's coming. The Rambam will only know when we live it. But this is Chabad. This tension built up. And they interviewed Jews, and here's a fascinating interview. It doesn't say who this person is exactly, what his orientation is, but Mintz describes him as a religious Jew with Hasidic overtones. Maybe he's a Satmar, maybe he's a Bavava. What I can't stand about Lubavitch is that other groups will readily admit that their current leader is not of the same stature as their predecessors of 100 years ago or even 50 years ago. No? What about Lubavitch? How can they say that Eber's going to be Mashiach? Does he equal the Tzemach Tzedek? Does he equal the Alter Rebbe? Don't we say Nitma'atu Hadarot? But you see, he does quote what Lubavitcher's will answer him. The Rebbe says, referring to Rebbe Menachem Mendel, and this goes back to Rishonim, this concept, even a dwarf can see further if he stands on the shoulders of a giant. And if he's also a great man, he can see even further than that. It's a beautiful concept. Nitma'atu hadarat. I can tell you, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, again I reveal the secret, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, so students would, I would use the word, torture him a little, because Reb Moshe always boasted about his son Dagon. Son Dagon wasn't in America, was in Europe. And even when he finally came to America, he was in Boston. We're talking the 1930s. So one time I heard this directly, I think it was Rav Levitis, directly from Talmidim of Rav Moshe from the early 30s. And they told me one time someone said to Rav Moshe, they say about your son Dagon that he's greater than your father. Knew Josh who was Reb Moshe Soloveitchik's father? Reb Chaim Brisker. When you say that name, stand up. Ribbono shel Olam, how did you dare say Reb Chaim's name sitting down? Knew Reb Moshe exploded. Hazei vait nisht, these are the exact words, that much? No. That much? No. Yeah, but look what the Rav accomplished. Of course, he stood on the shoulders of Reb Chaim. He knew Reb Chaim from his father. Many times the Rav had different concepts than you'll see in what's published. He knew Reb Chaim from his father. Hazei, stand on the shoulders. It's like research. How do you do research? One person stands on the shoulders of another person. Who did the first doctorate on the history of what today is Yeshiva University? Gilbert Klapman, Rabbi Klapman, Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapman. No, who has heard of Rabbi Klapman? Don't tell me your generation is so far gone you never heard. The man who built Beth Shalom in Lawrence. He's alive, but he's not well today, well into his 90s. Should have refuah shleima. He was a Talmud of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. His father was a shochet in the Midwest. Rabbi Klapman did his doctorate the early years of what today is Yeshiva University, 1886 to 1915. Years later, along comes a little kid, Rothkopf, and they assigned to him Rabbi Rebbe, which is 1915 to 1940. Well, you know how much I quote Gil Klapperman in my work. I'm standing on his shoulders. I'm still waiting for someone to come along and stand on my shoulders and do a doctorate on Reb Shmuel Belkin. It hasn't happened. I've pleaded. There's something beneath the scenes that I don't know about. Or it could be Rakefet has no influence whatsoever. I sit in this little corner. No one knows we exist. What, we're part of Yeshiva University? No one can believe. Why, you has a presence in Israel? How big is the presence? They rent the building to Torah Shraga. Torah Shraga has 150 students. And Rafi, how many students are in the Kollel today? Really students, 20?
20.
20. No, real students. I don't mean people who are sitting, whatever the reasons are. Say that 25? I'll sit fine, 25. Torah Shraga, how you know who, when, where? No one, but there's something beneath the surface. But you see, this is a very powerful answer. I'll give you another answer, too, that I heard from the Rav that refutes the entire question. I heard it in a different context, but I'm applying it. The Rav raised the issue. Why was our generation privileged to have the state of Israel? You fellas grew up with the state of Israel, but there are older people here who know what I'm saying. The state declared 48, Do you know that in Bnei Brak, they were dancing in the streets? I have a document here to give out. In 1949, every family in Bnei Brak was ordered by municipal law to hang an Israeli flag outside their homes on Yom HaTzmaut. No, you got to ask a simple question. What are we, bigger tzaddikim than our great-grandparents? Didn't that come up in yesterday's shiur? Didn't Reb Menashe Klein hit away? What the heck are you inventing? You're more worried about Kriyat HaShofar, Kriyat Megillah, than all the women who came before you? Will the tzitkaniyot? What are we better? Come on. Just think. What families? What are we talking about? All right, I'll talk my family. We're in America 115 years, 116 years. Who's left? All that's left from my family, and I had a great uncle, a big Talmud Chacham, was a Rav, a Sheikhet in Taunton, Massachusetts, had studied in Volozhin. What's left? The only part of my family, Jewish, alive, kicking. My family, that's it. My two brothers, myself, we're it. Out of the whole family, so many children. 6 children from one side, 3 children another side. My mother died having more great-grandchildren and great-grandchildren than all her brothers and sisters put together, magnified 10 times over at least, probably more. So what right do we have? We have the state of Israel. We live in Yerushalayim. We go to Tel Aviv, we go to Haifa, we go to Tzfat, we go to Hebron, we serve in an Israeli army, an army that's kasher, that observes Shabbat. What right? So the Rav said, you know why the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a gift like this? Because we were so close to disappearing after World War II. If not for the state of Israel, there'd be practically no Jews today. We recreated the Jewish people. Jewish consciousness, Jewish pride. Look what we did for Russian Jewry. It's now 25 years since the massive Aliyah. A lot is being written. What a miracle. The whole rebirth of the Tshuva movement. Take our Sameach. Right here in Yerushalayim, where it all began. Chabad, their outreach. Taglit. I told you, my grandson was a Madrich on Chabad Taglit. My grandson, he never knew. A kid grows up in Israel. What does he know about Chabad? All right, he can speak English, my grandson. He knows the way he grew up, the schools he went to, the Hesder he did, the army he knows. All right, he was a Madrich. He was overwhelmed on kids who knew nothing. But when the bus came up the hill to Yerushalayim, they were overwhelmed. When you think of Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich, I go back to that night, I can't get over it. So many years ago, Yosef HaTzadik, he wanted to walk from the airport to Yerushalayim. He said, I dreamt about it. They said, Yosef, it's endless, endless kilometers. So he finally agreed. He's an action. I know Yosef very well, you know that. My picture is in his book. His picture is in my book. He's an action. So he's finally agreed he'll ride till the outskirts, and where Sakharov Park is today, whatever they call it, that's where he got out of the car, and from there he started walking towards the Kotel. And the radio announced it. Where he was, every block, 81, and on every block, people joined him. By the time he reached the Kotel, 12 o'clock at night, there were like 20,000 people at the Kotel. Huh? I was there. My children were there. And it's no wonder my children are what they are today. So you see, the Rav said something very powerful. Same thing with Mashiach. You can ask the question, and I would answer it very firmly. Yes, we need Mashiach in our generation. Look at the assimilation. Look at Bernie Sanders. Look at the Jews who surrounded Obama. Look at some of the what was the word that that Meir Kahana invented to gentilize Jews in Israel. Look how assimilated. Look how distant they are. Look at this Yalon. What went on in the army, the Israeli army came out against beards. You want Haredim to go into the army? The first thing you should say is, we want every soldier to have a beard. We'll be very happy if everyone has a beard. Rakef has started a campaign, and I say it again, if anyone is listening, I would like to see a mikveh on every army base. So Hasidishi Yungaman can go to mikveh in the morning, as is their minhag. There's a mikveh right down the block here in Machon Lev, on every army base. If anyone's listening, get in touch with me, and I'll put you in touch with the lieutenant colonel, my Talmud in the army, who can arrange for you to dedicate a mikveh. There are already mikvot on a number of bases. So you understand, the Rav is very powerful, and that's a meritic answer. Yes, the seventh Reb is a lot less than the Baal Tanya. Fun. But the Baal Tanya's generation was still, the Jews were Jews. In our generation, Rakefid boasts there are over 2 million Shemir Shabbos Jews in Israel. What about the other 4 million? You understand? Everyone, the Pew report, still they claim there's not a million religious Jews in America. With all that's happened, with all the Hasidim, look at the others, look at the assimilation, look how they don't know anything. Look at that article I showed you yesterday, the hatred for Torah. So, we need Mashiach now. By the way, a side story, but a very cute story. Some of you know that Malk and I have a mitzvah that there's no one else you've ever met recently that has the same mitzvah. We have a mitzvah of Pidgin Shvuyim, certified by the Mossad. We got a family out of Russia early. They had been in refusal 13 years. My dear Eliyahu Essas and Anya, their family, Vilna, how I got them out, you know, the story's not for now, but you can look into Washington, the documents and everything is there. Took many years, wasn't simple. And ultimately what got them out was the power of the purse. And I give all the credit in the world to Izzy Singer, who was the right-hand man of Bronfman, the head of the World Jewish Congress. And I give all the credit. This was an assimilated Jew that came from good background. His grandfather was a Hashub in Yid, Seagram's, a Veli, a good Jew, a proper Jew. And he was closing a multi-hundred-million-dollar deal with the Russians, 86, I should say. And part of the deal, well, it could be in 85 it was closing. Elia got out in early 86, closing the deal. And he made a tanai. This had to do with their vodka and Seagram selling it. And he made a tanai. The deal does not go through without the Essas family being released. And here what all the congressmen and presidents and secretaries of state had requested, Russia had spat in their face. And Bronfman, were they kicked out quickly? No forms, no nothing, no red tape. Bronfman said, I want them to address the World Jewish Congress. Tu Bishvat 86. Out they went. And wow, so you see, now he gets out. Now notice, I tell you his name, Eliyahu Essas of Vilna. So when he got out, we were at a number of affairs together, and suddenly the Chabotnikim there, and they start singing, Mashiach, Mashiach, and he refuses to sing. And I said to him, Elia, what's the matter with you? These are good Jews. No, Mashiach, they're messianists. You know, this is already in the late 80s, 86, 87. He absolutely refused to sing. Mashiach, messianists, no. All right, delicate issue. But our generation, don't give me an argument that the Rebbe is not equal to the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now, then he goes on. to interview Chabotnikim. And you see already in the 1980s, the Messianic issue was flowing, and there are many different opinions. Here he interviews a Chabad Chassid. We hope it's him. We hope it's anybody. Being a follower of his and knowing his righteousness, he might be a candidate. He's one of the few candidates around. But I can't say that it's absolutely him. The Rebbe is preparing us for the Mashiach. Whether the Rebbe is or is not the Mashiach, it really doesn't matter. I don't preach to my children that the Rebbe is the Mashiach. But the Rebbe gives us insight and keeps us hoping for Mashiach. If Hashem had wanted us to know, he would have told us. Asking who is Mashiach is an irrelevant question. The Rambam said, he's quoting the Rambam we just quoted, we cannot be carried away with prophecy. You have to carry out what you have to do. So you see, this is a balanced approach. I would like to believe, and I think I'm correct, that the majority of Hasidim in the 80s had this attitude. Rabbi Yehuda Krinsky, the leader of the Lubavitch educational programs and a frequent Lubavitch spokesman, and am I right, Rabbi Krinsky was a graduate of Maimonides in Boston? I think he went to Maimonides. I think he's a graduate, if I'm not mistaken. I know he was close to the Rav. Okay, well, that's okay. If Seth Faber's listening, let him answer us. He says, what's the issue? So what if the students think the Rebbe's Mashiach? Why are they, those outside critics, worried about it? Yeshiva students have always thought that the Rebbe, that their Rebbe was the Mashiach. Some students say that the Rebbe is the Mashiach. There are people who don't believe it, but we believe, and the Rebbe could be the Mashiach. All right, that's an approach which is extremely more aggressive, I would say. Was ist schlecht? What's so bad if the kid thinks the Rebbe is Mashiach? And this is Rabbi Krinsky. All right, some believe he's not the Mashiach. But we all believe the Rebbe could be the Mashiach. One Lubavitcher Chassid, highly placed, provided his own rough estimate of the range of opinion within the Lubavitcher community. And they quote him, I would say that 35% say the Rebbe is the Mashiach. 35% believe internally that the Rebbe is the Mashiach, but won't say it. And 20% believe it's not the person, but it's the idea. It could be the Rebbe, but not necessarily. And perhaps this is an accurate description of the way they felt in the 1980s. I have to tell you of my argument with some of my colleagues, some of the Rosh Yeshiva from America. So you all know that a number of years ago, Lubavitch every year has a weekend for YU students at 770. So every year, 30 kids go, 25, and a number of years ago, suddenly over 100 young people registered and went. The Rosh Yeshiva got very upset. And there was a movement underway to declare Lubavitch chutz l'tchum. Some of you may remember that I argued in this very Beis Medrash with some of the Rebbeim, with many students around us. Rav Heschel Schechter was very upset with Tfilah Shelo Bisman, their Rabbi Carson. I have to tell you that I'm also very upset with Tfilah Shelo Bisman. I think I even davened earlier than Rav Heschel. For 47 years, I have davened Shabbos morning, 6:30 a.m. I have not missed the minyan. Relax yourself. Let me defend the Rebbe. Don't you? Relax, Alex. I've davened 6:30 in the mornings. I davened 5:30. Sometimes we adjust it to 5:35. I would like to make it to 5:45, but no one listens to me. The minyan has been evidently 5:30 for the last 70 years. But I told Reb Heschel, that's the battle. The Vilna Gaon fought the battle, and the Vilna Gaon lost. What can we do? That Chabad is wrong, they're wrong. But Chassidim Rishonim Hayu Shoim Shachatu Mitpalalim, or good Chabadnik goes to Mikveh and has Zuck to Hillim and he has a cup of coffee to get ready for davening. And you all know what I have in my book, Washington. A Litvak like myself davens to eat. A Chassid eats to daven. And that's an old Lubavitch Vod, and I told how it played a role in my life. Read, study Washington, you'll enjoy it. So I told Reb Heschel, I agree with you, but we lost that battle, Reb Chaim Voloshin accepted them with this misgiving. All right, they do wrong, you can argue, you can plead, you can talk, you can cajole, but Lubavitch Shabbos morning, I think in my shul now on the side, they gave them the shtibul room, I think they begin at 10 o'clock. I know when I come in for mincha, they're still fabringen. It's amazing. Kugel and all the good things and have schnapps and brampfen and they're fabringen. And I can tell you if the original founders of the shul, the people I knew who ran the shul in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s were still around, they would have heart failure. But what can we lost that battle. All right, so Reb Heschel I foiled with on that level. Rabbi Willett tells me they're all messianist. I said, first of all, it's a big difference to say the Rebbe could be Mashiach than to believe he really is the Mashiach or will be the Mashiach, will rise from the dead perhaps. I said, but what do you mean they're all messianist? So he told me, it's just what it says here, he spoke with the Chabad representative in Riverdale. Do you believe the Rebbe's Mashiach? And the Chabadnik, the Shaluach there, said to Rabbi Willick, why are you asking me personal questions? So from that he derived that that they all believe the Rebbe's Mashiach. Anyway, we fenced, we foiled, we went back and forth. And a few weeks later, I told you the story, the word went out that they backed off and they're not going to rasa the young people going to Chabad. And some of my students said, Rebbe, look at the impact you had. I said, gentlemen, I found out the true story. Yours truly had no impact whatsoever. What happened was they came back to America and the Tsar of Kashrut, my dear Rabbi Menachem Genak, got wind of what was happening and told Rav Schechter, he and Rav Belsky are the machshirim of the OU, if we asa Chabad, you can close the OU down. Danny Kaplan, are you willing to live in Thailand, in China? There are 50 factories in China under supervision today. Do you know who the Mashkichim are? Chabadnikim, Thailand, the fish, what goes on with tuna. It, by the way, Starkist is owned by a pious, from Eidot HaMizrach, Israeli, multi-millionaire, based in Hong Kong, runs a kollel in Hong Kong, but the Mashkichim essentially are people sent by the OU, and you have a lot of Chabadnikim among them. So you see, the OU, the Heksherim, saved us from a major machlokes with Chabad. But very fascinating, as he says, 35 will say it openly, 35% believe it internally, another 20% will tell you halavai he would be, but right now we can't say he is. And the other 10% will just answer, we don't know.
Anybody
know statistics nowadays? No, I don't know if they're exact statistics, but I have a feeling that the non-messianics are by far the majority today. And we'll get to it. There are reasons why. The messianics are vociferous. They have some very heavy money behind them from Balei Tshuva, who became Balei Tshuva through the Rebbe. And many of them are Israelis who've done very well outside of Israel. But I believe that the statistics have shifted. The Rebbe is dead. The Rebbe is dead many years. But we will get there. We will get there. I just want to end off this chapter. It's very, very fascinating. And they even quote, Min says that one of the Chabadnikim said to him that, why is everyone angry that we talk so much about Mashiach? And he tells Mintz the following story. Rabbi Yoel, if you saw the clip now on the television, it's very frightening what happened with those Chabadnikim. And by the way, their bodies, I saw something on television, which Israeli television would never show, but this television channel 12, I think it was 10, whatever. You can look on the websites, you pick it up. It showed the bodies being dragged out of the water, and they were naked. They were naked. So there's a big machloket in Satmar. I was amazed to see this, that Satmar Hasidim carried on at the funeral. They had no right to bury this multi-billionaire who had been involved with legal problems near Rabbi Yoel. So the poor lady, the Gentile lady reporting, and reporting very fairly, she couldn't pronounce Yoel, Kiryat Yoel, Kiryat Joel, Joel. She should have said Joel, Kiryat Joel already, Joel. And it was very fascinating to hear the way she pronounces it. So when Rabbi Yoel died in 1979, you all know that Rebbetzin Feige took over the Hasidus, and she then built a new house. By the way, there were many who refused to go with the Sigur Torah, with the Rebbe's nephew. He had been a stockbroker. It's only in the Hasidic world. You can have machlekes like this. A stockbroker becomes Rebbe, and the two sons today are the sons of the Sigata. And she remained a very big, towering personality, Rebbetzin Feige. I told you, I knew Satmar Hasidim had her picture on the wall and told me they don't go with the Sigata. The Zayam geblieben the Chassidim from Rabbi Yoelish, and this they have remained the Chassidim of Rabbi Yoelish. That's what they called them, and she is our Rebbe. She built a new house, and according to this Lubavitcher, she built a room that when Mashiach comes, they could invite the Mashiach into the house. So you have here. What are you yelling at Chabad? Even Satmar, you have this fervor, you have this feeling. Okay. Gentlemen, there was one other part to the puzzle, and I give Jerome Mintz credit for quoting it. And I know about this. I know about it well because I've heard the arguments. The Rebbe had a minhag. Many, many people, you have a drasha. I heard many drushot in my youth. The Rav, of course, taught me how to speak, how to preach. But even in the Bronx, there was some very fabulous dashonim. There was Rabbi Akiva Prednetsky, for instance. He was a Talmud of Rav Moshe. He was the son of Rabbi Lezer Prednetsky. Anyone from the Bronx recognize the name? Akiva Prednetsky, his father, Rabbi Lezer Prednetsky, and Alta Telza was my grandfather's Rav. He was maybe 6'1", I would say. It's Rabbi Michael Hecht's grandfather. That mean anything to anyone here? Yeah. Rabbi Michael Hecht, Rabbi Ephraim Hecht. He's a lawyer. Ephraim Michael, of course, was a Rebbe. These are people I grew up with, my youth. So his son, Akiva Prednetsky, was all of 4 foot, I would say 11. He was a short man. I taught his daughter in Michlala. And she was married to Rabbi Cohn, who was a principal in Tsar Academy, who came in Aliyah from Hillcrest. They came in Aliyah, Shulamit Prednetsky, wonderful lady. So her father, a short little guy, when he got up to speak, Per Mapik Magoliot, he was a fabulous darshan. And you had in the Bronx, you had Darshanim, I don't say all, but you had a hardcore, you had Rabbi David Hollander. Rabbi David Hollander in Yiddish, in English, he was something. And I had the privilege to hear these people speak. Rabbi, I can't tell you about Rabbi Nathan Tarrigan, because his shul was too far for me to be there on Shabbat. But these other people I heard, and 9 out of 10 times, they would end the talk. Und wir sollen solche sein zu Mekabel Panem Mashiach Zitainu Bimheira Biyameinu. And everyone would yell out, Amen. You're with me, Josh? We should be Zaycha to receive Mishpanim. Rest is Hebrew, Mashiach Zitainu. Everyone would yell out, Amen. The Rebbe would say, Nu, can anyone tell me? So min zeiche sein zu sein makabel da panem mit nei panem panem von mischir zu keine bim heder bi on meinu bald jetzt mamish bekarov mamish mamish soon mamish. So critics came up, what does mamish mean? Menachem Mendel Schneerson. Okay? And what did the Rebbe mean by this? Mamish? I have to tell you, I don't believe critics can say what they want. Many Darshanim said, Mamish, Mamish. The Rebbe was not the only one to say it. Yes, it's true, this was a standard format in many of the drashot, not when he said it, the Valokim Chayim, that was all Hasidus, that was on a different level. But on the more popular, you see, the Rebbe interspersed. When you heard the Rebbe, when you went to a Fabrengen, so it's not that he spoke like the Rav for 4.5 hours like the Yotzai Drasha. The Fabrengens could be 7 hours. I don't know how the Rebbe had the energy to sit there. It was all night. The man had, this is a certain strength that certain people have. They don't have to sleep. I told you, Rabbi Riskin, the secret of Rabbi Riskin is he doesn't have to sleep at night. I have seen him sleep 3-4 hours and get up and give a shiur and have a full day of meetings and not see a bed again until 1 a.m., and he's perfectly alive and alert. That's a certain gift that people have. I don't have it. Many of you don't have it. But the Rebbe had it. He did not have to sleep at night. He slept a few hours. It's an amazing thing. These people, their bodies, the Vilna Gaon had it. It's. You look at the Hakdom of the Bnei HaVilna Gaon to Shulchan Aruch Or Chaim, to the Vilna Gaon's commentary, and you'll see how the Vilna Gaon, he slept every, out of the 24-hour day, every 6 hours he slept for a half hour, 45 minutes. And that gave him chiyut, that's their word, that gave him the ability to be totally alert and awake. So the Rebbe Rafabrengen didn't speak 4.5 hours like the Rav. How the Rav had that strength is beyond me too. Kanayin Hara Gedolei Yisrael, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives them special strength. So the Rebbe would speak, Fabreng would begin, they'll sing a niggun. Then the Rebbe would speak, give a talk. It could be on Parshat HaShavua, he worked in Yonad Yoma. It was a more popular talk. And then he would always send off the Kabel Panim Mishrif Zehei B'mheiru B'yameinu B'karov Mamish. Then they would sing more, drink L'chaim, and then the Rebbe would give a pilpul Mamish. He would take a Rashi, he would take a Rambam, he would take a Gemara. The Rebbe had Lamdona that was unbelievable. Remember, he yet corresponded with Reb Yosef Rosen, with the Rocket Shaver. I mean, how many people can correspond with the Rocket Shaver? This was the Rebbe. You're talking about the Rebbe who astounded Reb Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Remember when he needed smicha chveis to get admission to the library at the University of Berlin? So he went to be able to get to all the books. He was not a student there, but he had a show. He's a rabbi, and he would get the card that would admit him. So he went to Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg in the seminary, said he would like him to give him smicha. So Rabbi Chiel Yaakov said, what, to give you smicha? You have to take the courses, pass the exams. So Rabbi Chiel Yaakov, who he was talking to, said, you know what? I'm going to give you a tshuva I'm writing now, a kuntris. You'll take it overnight. We'll talk about it tomorrow morning. Remember, I told you the story. I gave you the sources. It's an absolute true story. So he gave him a kuntris on a cemetery. It had to be relocated. They were building over it. The German, not anti-Semitism, but the city expanded, and they had to relocate to a new area outside the city. Are you allowed to remove the bodies? How do you remove the bodies? How do you do the relocation? How do you do the likurat samot? What are all the halachas involved? What about the avelut, etc.? And the Rebbe looks at the book, and the next morning he talks to Rabbi Shmuel Yaakov. He shows him sources Rabbi Shmuel Yaakov never dreamt about. He couldn't believe what the Rebbe knew, so he gave him smicha. So you understand, then there would be the Devar Elokim Chayim, where when I saw the Rebbe doing it, he would jump up and everyone jumped up. So people told me he also could do it sitting down. There was eyewitnesses that occasionally, I guess it depended upon his strength. And the Devar Elokim Chayim he gave with his eyes closed. At times he cried. He held a handkerchief to keep himself grounded. This is inspiring. What the man knew. And the Rav, when he went to the Fabrengen to celebrate 30 years, so I know who was there with them, among them my Talmidim. So they asked the Rav, so the Rav said that he understood when the Rebbe spoke, Torah Hanigla, you know, he said he's a Lamdan Mufak, he understood the Lubavitcher. But when he spoke to Vala Kim Chayim, the Rav said that he couldn't comprehend. That's a different world. That's Kabbalah. That's already into a different world. So he gets involved here with the Mamish. And of course, there were those who said the Mamish, Reb Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and those who agreed it's not to be taken as Rashi Teva. Okay. Finally, and this is all before the Rebbe dies, remember this chapter. We're going to come to the Rebbe, what happens after his death. Next week is a major share of sources, etc. The famous talk, April 11th, 1991. And this is the talk, I remember the storm it created at the time. Now you have to remember, 1991, the Rebbe is sitting 90 years of age. You have to remember, 90 years of age, I remember Rav Aaron Soloveitchik saying to me, can you believe it? Can you believe that I'm 80 years old? And I know where I stand today. I'm, Baruch Hashem, getting there very rapidly. 90 is 90. I know in my shul, a lot of the davenists are in their 80s. And they're, oh, this man turned 90. Ooh. How old are you? 84, 85. This man turned 90. It's an interesting man who turned 90. When I first came in Aliyah, I had invitations from many of the kibbutzim hadatayim. They wanted to meet a student of the Rav. They heard of Rabbi Soloveitchik, but there were none of his students living here. He heard me speak in Kibbutz Eliyahu. It had to be 69 or 70. And we daven today. He's in his 90s. His son davens right behind me. Good people. Good people. The Rebbe now had been Rebbe since 1951. 40 years. Mashiach is not here. And that talk that the Rebbe gave, it was a Thursday night, the Rebbe davened Maariv. And after Maariv, the Rebbe gave a klap and said he wants to say a few words. Everyone gathered around him, the word went out, Crown Heights, more people came running in. And I'm quoting the Rebbe now, English translation from the Yiddish. With all the work that I've done, I can't find even 10 people who really want Mashiach. I'm speaking about this in public because hopefully if I talk about it, maybe it will affect one, two, or three Jews who will be stubborn and will not agree to any substitutions other than Mashiach. Declaring that he had done all that was possible to bring the Mashiach, he said his work had carried him to futility and emptiness. Hevel v'reik. The original words. It was now up to his followers to take up the task. What more can I do? I've done all I can to bring the Jewish people to truly demand and clamor for the redemption, yet we are still in exile, and more importantly, an eternal exile of distorted priorities. It is I leave it to you. It is not sufficient to mouth slogans. It is in your hands, Avicii, to bring the ultimate redemption with your actions through your study and observance of Torah. You can bring about the peaceful world of Mashiach Tzidkenu. That's a very powerful talk. It's like a leader raising his hands. 40 years, I did everything I could, putting all my energies, and here I am. I've accomplished next to nothing when it comes to the main goal. It is up to you. Now, this is quite a sign of what life is all about. Leadership is all about. Greatness is all about. And it comes back to what we spoke about last week. A mass movement is not like a Rosh Yeshiva. The Rav Mori Rebbe, how many lives did he affect? How many lives did he inspire? All right, I'll give credit, a few hundred. You want to be generous, over 1,000. But you see, to be a Talmud of the Rav, it can never be a mass movement. My grandchildren compliment me. I can't believe what I hear from them. You're always learning. You're always with a book, always with a sefer. All right, it's not entirely true. I can't always achieve it, but I try to watch something with my wife a half hour at night. Now I want to go back to Chatzer. I don't want to do Shtisel again. I wrote to Herbie to hold off the DVDs. We want to go back and see Chatzer again. All right, you have to have leisure time. It's an interesting question. Fine. I'll talk about that at a certain point in a public venue, about leisure time. Europe, America, my Rebbeim. But you see, the Rav, at the end of his life, was very happy because he raised a cadre of students who he felt they would continue. Brisk, learning, shas, paiskim. All that goes with it. It was a handful. A handful of students. 1,000. I don't think it's that many, to be honest with you. All right, many learned with the Rav, but I mean, who holds by learning? Who understands what it's all about? Who accepted the message? The Rebbe, fine. Tens of thousands. You wear a black hat, you wear a gato. You have a beard, you have payas, you drink l'chaim. But were they really transformed? Did they really put all their efforts in? These people have to go to work, they have to make a living. Many of them live outside of a sacred area. I think a chassid in Kfar Chabad is probably on a higher level than a chassid living in Crown Heights. You have in Crown Heights a very prominent chassid from a very prominent family, opened up, I think it's a pizza place on a very high level, a restaurant. The Gentiles eat there, the Afro-Americans eat there, and they meet with Lubavitchers there. All right, they're not going to talk in Lubavitch. They're not going to talk Hasidus. Talking about Rabbi Professor Bronner's son. He's been written, I think his name is Daniel. He's been written up, but he accomplished there. He's very successful financially. Rakefet reads that his heart breaks. That's why your father came out of Russia to go to Be'er Sheva to help build the Be'er Sheva University, and you should wind up in Crown Heights. Rakefet winds up in Beverly Hills. I smacked the face of the young man, and a beautiful young man. He's a mentor, he's everything good, but he lives in Beverly Hills. Malk and I risked our lives to get the family out of Russia. All right, the Ribbono Shel Olam took care of Elia. This fellow, this son, Yosef, he's a fabulous individual, don't misunderstand me, married a girl, of Russian origins living on the coast. Would you care to guess who made the girl from? Chabad. Rebellia, who wouldn't sing Mashiach, Mashiach. Chabad, opposed, Rebellia of Vilna. But the girl wants to live near her parents. Beverly Hills, beautiful place. A little easier, perhaps, to live there. I don't know. I doubt it, but perhaps, than Yerushalayim. I doubt it. You see, the Rebbe was thwarted. I can understand it. You're reaching out, Chabad, massive movement. How many people truly became Hasidim? B'chol nafsham, b'chol levavam. Very few. Remember the story I told you, how I was pushing to come closer to the Rebbe, and the 6'4" Hasid with such a long beard, with all the black clothes, turned around and cursed me in beautiful English curse words that only Shalom would know. All right. I was smart enough to understand. You don't become disillusioned. This guy was probably a sailor, worked on the merchant marines, I don't know, at sea. Some Chabadnik picked him up when they docked in Thailand. And he's a Chabadnik. I can understand. I can understand the Rebbe. But that night had a tremendous impact. Because it's like the Hasidim grasped at the straws. Let the Rebbe declare himself. Let us declare the Rebbe. Let us fight. Gave tremendous impulse to what later would become what we popularly called the Messianic movement. The Rav, Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, come back to Rav Aaron's Hesped, the way we began. They didn't have these illusions. How many people can really learn in the yeshiva and really become great? And as a matter of fact, and you know this from studying the Rav, the world of, and I was once challenged in this very kollel, I mentioned in the kid, that's not what my Rebbeim told me in New York. More than 20, 25 years ago. And there was Dafka, that Persian student I had. And the next 3 weeks, my voice was not heard in that class. The Rav. I played tapes. And boy, he made a party. He didn't make me happy. He burned his black hat. You know, you think I told him, I'm not here to wear a black hat. No, he burned his, my Rebbeim lied to me. The Rav was very, very unhappy with the swing to the right that affected why you are. And he spoke about it. I'm quoting you word by word. The whole is a house, the Shevet Rechas. Everyone did this whole concept of dressing the same. This is Hasidus, this is not Litvish. What? The Litvish world, individuality. Doesn't exist today. Look at Lakewood, I told you more than once. You can hop a heart attack. That's the Lakewood I knew. That's Kletz. That's Reb Aaron Kotler. The only one in the yeshiva who wore a black hat was Reb Aaron. Even the Mashgiach wouldn't wear black, brown hat. The Rav wore a brown hat, a gray hat. I never ever saw with it. You know when he wore a black hat? When he couldn't shop for himself in the 1980s and his students had to go out to buy hats for him, so they would bring him a black hat. Yes, Nathan.
When the Rav went to the Fabringen, he asked for a black hat.
He knew where he was going. What do you want? What do you want? I would also, if I had to go to Fabringen, but no, I have to be myself. It's okay. Believe me, the Rebbe would understand me 1,000%, not just 100. But you see, the Rav is a Litvak. And I quote Rebbe, and you can read about it, and you get the source in the Rav. Today, all that happens is you want to tell your neighbor, I think like you, I look like you, I live like you, I act like you. Nothing new, ingenious, innovative can come out of this attitude. You're not going to create a new Reb Chaim. You understand? The Litvische Welt with Reb Chaim, he wouldn't wear, well, you know the hat Reb Chaim wore. It's like the hat I wear during the winter. You saw the Chafetz Chaim, you also picture, you see the movie of the Chafetz Chaim, Tchiyat HaMetim. You all saw it on the internet. It's, to me, amazing. No, look what he looked like. Look the way he dressed. Look at the hat he wore. So, you see, I can understand the Rebbe. And I'm happy to be a Litvak. And I end off the class citing from Washington again. Bididi Chaviyov, that happened to me. Danny Kaplan knows, I've devoted, how many years is it already? Since 81? Figure out how many years? What is it?
35 years.
35 years to helping his family. Of course, they do good things. It's related to Rabbi Levine's family. 35 years. So one time, the executive director of the fundraiser for Shvut Ami was a colleague of mine. He's no longer alive, Lo Aleinu, died young, Y.U. Musmach. But he had this attitude, Y.U. is the greatest. There's nothing else in the world that counts. So we're walking along Rehov Strauss, Cholomoid Sukkis, coming from Shvut Ami, Rehov Bililius, into Strauss, coming back towards the heart of the city. And there's a man coming along with a Bekesher and a Gartel and a Strimel. And when he sees me, he runs over, hugs me, kisses me, Shalom Alechem, Moriu Rebbe, Hagimu Zmanim L'Sasonu L'Simcha. And I embrace him. He was my student. His wife was my student. They tell you who it is. Moshe Feigenbaum. He's the sofa. You know who I'm talking about? Marty. Marty the sofa.
Maybe before we use the name of Moshe,
you knew him as Marty. Yeah, I knew him also as Marty, but all right, that everyone knows Moshe. His kids are in there, very good children. His wife, you know who her grandfather was? The Talmud Mufak of Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. The Otsa HaGaonim. Reb Menashe Levine, that's unbelievable, from whom she comes. It's her grandfather. So when Marty walks away, he was walking further into Mea Shearim, my colleague turns to me and says, Aaron, how have you failed like that? That's your student? And I said to him, you nitwit. The greatest compliment in the world that I can have students of various different shades and stripes, and you saw the love with which he related to me. This is a Rebbe, this is a Machaneh. It's a world of difference between the Lishtische Welt or the Hasidische Welt. But my heart goes out to the Rebbe. At that moment in 1991, I've done what I can. Now it's up to you. Gentlemen, next week's class will go for $99,000 linked to the shekel on the IOU list to get in. Alex, if I give it away for free, they treat it as if it's nothing. It's got to feel what it means to hit upon what we're going to do next week with all the sources. But what do we do today? We finished out the Rambam, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Bet. What a powerful Rambam. All right, we're living it. It's miraculous. With all the problems and all the difficulties. But wow, it is miraculous. It's overwhelming. Who would ever dream that the Minister of Defense of the State of Israel is more at home in Russian than he is in Hebrew. My dream is that Lieberman should be at the UN or at Congress or the Senate and speak Russian. You know what that would do for the Russian Jews in America? we might see an awakening with the second generation there now who are dancing the American tune. They may wake up who we are and what the state of Israel has done for us. Gentlemen, always say one line to them. I copyrighted it. You have a choice to be one more Social Security number or to change and help and alter the course of the history of your people, your Torah, your land. One family heard me say that in 1980, and the balabas of the house told me he couldn't make Havdalah till 1 a.m. He heard me speak at Sadash Lishit in Staten Island, and he went into a state of shock. P.S., as a result of that line, there are tens and tens of direct descendants of that family living al Admat HaKodesh at this very moment. In addition to finishing out, we're living it. We did chapter, almost finished it, very fascinating chapter by Mintz. I have to say, it's interesting. Halavai, the man would have lived longer, and we could have got to know him and bring him here and maybe reintroduce him to his heritage. Bernie Sanders, perhaps we have to give up, but Jerome Mintz died too soon. And we'll pick up exactly from 91 when the Rebbe made that statement. It has great implication today. Now, I do want to, let me just get everything together. This is Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's Hesped for the Rebbe, if anyone wants it. This give to Jay Solomon, please. Try not to bend it. Okay. Joe Griss. Wow, what a man. Someone showed me this picture last week. I don't remember who. And they asked me to identify. This is Reb David Lifshitz. This is Reb Moshe Feinstein. I don't know who this is in the middle. If anyone knows, please tell me. There are two copies of it, so maybe two different people can take it and try to see if anyone can identify it. If you gather around me, this is a picture that Jay Solomon pulled out of some website. And I can tell you where this picture was taken. This is Rabbi Belkin's burial. It's Cholamoed, let's see, Rabbi Belkin died, Cholamoed Sukkos, right? Same Yotzeit as what? He died Cholamoed Sukkos. The Rav died Cholamoed Pesach. And he died Cholamoed Sukkos. And at the burial, this is the Rav. That's Rabbi Chalap. That's Rabbi Lifshitz. This is president of the student council of Yeshiva, my student, Dr. Phil Kaslow. Who is this? Is that Luzza Muskin, Rabbi Muskin?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's Rabbi Muskin. Okay, confirmed.
Isn't that Rav
Zaks? No, that Rav Zaks was living in Israel. That's that I believe is Abba Braunschweigel. Let's see if you can confirm it.
Looks like it.
That's Abba Braunschweigel. Anyone else that we know there? Okay, two copies of Tradition, the latest one, hot off the press. This is a beautiful piece of Torah article by Elchanan Pukor, learning the Kollel. It's on the Rambam, I've dashed this Rambam, it's about Mesirat Nefesh. It's based upon the Rambam of the soldier going out to war. Kiddush Hashem, a very, very powerful essay. No one believed me here. Chagigat Yom Ha'atzmaut b'Vnei Brak, 1949. Mutelet choval kol toshav la'anif degadlu mi al beito me'yom shlishi be'erev u'meshech yom revi'i. They had a parade in B'nai Brak, Where do you think the parade was? Rehov Rabbi Akiva. So this is quite a document. Now here is a lot more. Here I have two copies of the same article. It's the influence of the secular world on the Haredi mind, and it deals with Rav Avigdor Miller. I don't think these, again, people doing research today. I'm not overly. In other words, it's a given. Rabbi Avigdor Miller was an American. So, of course, he was integrated, and he was rabbi of a young Israel. But it's a very interesting article, what they try to show, what they quote. This is a fabulous article with pictures of Rabbi Lazar and Gorbachev in Russia, the man who let the Jews out. They meet at some affair. Chabad, unbelievable. This is on a famous Dr. Yaakov Chanukah, Svadik Saloniki, and he a brilliant guy, PhD in physics, and he describes how he became totally frum when he met Chabadnikim in the 1960s. In fact, they were the first Jews I'd ever met who actually seemed to be happy about being Jewish. Here's a letter from the Rebbe to an IDF widow. It's very, very moving. I mean, the Rebbe, he had such insight. Here is a visitor to Yerushalayim and someone that he hosted. 30 years later, they meet again. It's fascinating, the interaction. This is about Gibraltar. Chabad just opened there, or is there. This is about the Rebbe, someone who had a child who was blind no more. This is for Rakefet. Exhibition tells the story of baseball's role in American Jewish life. I wrote to the person who sent me from Rabbi Gurek, did a whole article. Anyone here from Teira Vadas? This is a memorial booklet for Rabbi Belsky. Very fascinating who Rabbi Belsky was and did. Anyone here from the Bronx? Two articles, even my wife enjoyed this. Then he says, watch the yacht. This is about the Bronx is burning. What happened to the Bronx? They're both the same. This is for Vic Snow. Vic, last week, as we sat here in unbelievable heat, it was snowing in Cleveland. This is sent by you, McClinton, there. This is from the Washington Post, how Israel is turning part of the Negev Desert into Cyber City. That's what the Prime Minister just boasted about. Okay? Now, that's the Hebrews. Now I got to deal with Alex. Alex, Friday morning.
Yes.
Listen to me carefully.
Yeah.
9 o'clock, the meal begins on time.
I think it might have been scheduled for 9:30, but if 9, we can make it 9.
The earlier for me, the better.
Okay, so I'll
you want me to speak on the Rav? Okay.
Well, on the Rav, and specifically on themes related to...
I'm speaking on one simple topic for an audience that never saw the Rav, never heard the Rav, never dreamt about the Rav.
Standing next to you.
Okay, I'm talking about the Rav, Yashakayach. I'm talking about the Rav as an individual and the Rav as part of the community.
Okay,
and I'm talking the challenge that every rabbi has in his life. It would have little to do with the philosophy. I'm going to leave that to you. I will say that. I need a microphone, and I need someone to record it, to put it on whyutorah.org. I cannot stay too long. I have a lot of responsibility on Fridays. I have a wife, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and all that goes with it, and we're Makabel Shabbos early. I'm a couple Shabbos when you haven't gone to mikveh yet.
We're going to be doing early Shabbat this week.
Okay. So, are we making a deal? Now, if any outsiders want to come to join us, I would like them to be able to come. Anyone who comes to my class is invited Shabbos morning, 9 o'clock. The deal only goes through...
Friday morning.
Friday morning, not Shabbat. The deal only goes through with a microphone and someone to record. I don't want to have any part of it.
Okay, so I assume I'll confirm it with you, but I assume we can do it in this room with the normal setup.
Yeah, but you want to serve a breakfast.
Right, yeah.
You can serve here.
Yeah, I assume so.
Tables outside and bring food inside.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
If I can use this microphone, fine. All right, gentlemen, until we meet again. By the way, Marshall Tartik, they're having a weekend.
Twice a year we have a Shabbaton for everyone in Gross, and we wanted Rebbe to be...
they want to devote the Shabbaton to Adam 1 and Adam 2.
Well, Adam 2.
I want to devote the Shabbaton. They should know who the Rebbe is and deal with it. Adam 1, Adam 2, the problems. I'll deal with it. You see, Universal. Say that... my problem is I have too much to say. But we'll do. My wife gave permission, so you have to be makir taiva. But we can't come for Shabbos. She can't handle the hills, and it's exhausting. And also for me, if I'm going to teach Sunday, Monday, zhalev in de kaiches. You know a little Yiddish? No. Zhalev in de kaiches. No, how do you explain it? Ask Professor Rothkopf.
Save it. Hold it.
Okay, that sounds good. And one second, and everything else we've accomplished. And by the way, next week they're regular Sheyorim, but the week after that is Yom Yerushalayim. Sunday they're no Sheyorim.
Oh, wow.
And tell me if Monday I can teach. I have to know. Yeah. No, wow. Don't tell me yes. You got to find out when the march is through the city. Is it Saturday night or Sunday night? When they're up all night. If it's Sunday night, I can't teach on Monday. I can't teach. I want to have students. I don't want to teach to an empty room. I can't. I'm not going to be up all night.
I'm sure people will. The March of Sunday night will still be.
Yeah. Well, you have to figure out.
If
you
act like a tassel.
Okay. And then I think we have Shavuos, and that's it. That's the end of the year, whatever. I don't teach after Shavuos, because students have to finish their exams, whatever. And I have to prepare my material for America. I have a world that I'm speaking, etc., including Chabad. I've been invited as a feature speaker at the Raw Torah Outreach Learning Program, whatever it's called. So I want to be honest with you, I'm not going to speak. I want to see what's going on.
770?
Yeah, no.
Where is it?
Palm Springs, California.
Oh, that's fun.
And no, I want to see what's going on. I want to see who these people are. But they're trying to bait me that I should... that Shabbos, I can go and be a scholar in residence, you know. No, forget about the money. I'm going, this is once in a lifetime. I want to see who the people are. I want to see how their Shabbos is. My problem is if they daven at 10 o'clock, I may have to daven Shachris for Yechidit, make Kiddush, and have breakfast, and then go and join them. We'll see.
Yeah, when I went on the Crown Heights Shabbaton with YU, actually, we had an early minion. We broke away and had our own early minion.
They have an early minion.
777. Yeah.
770 has endless minyanim, so yeah, you have everything under the sun.
And the main minion was a little crazy.
And God should give strength, and we should be makabel penei mashiach zetenu b'karev mamish. To Giri, I want to say a big mazel tov. I met his wife to be, and we should just hear good news, and you should be zaycha to ador yisharim. And we have a wedding this Thursday night. I'm very inspired. You don't know what it means to me because you're looking at history sitting here. I was a Mendel Gottesman fellow.
Take that home from the Bronx.
No one knows what that is anymore. You don't know.
The Gottesman Library.
Can you save it for you?
A Mendel Gottesman fellow. Aaron Lichtenstein's. I
just wanted to see
he was a Mendel Gottesman fellow. And we used to meet once a year on Mendel Gottesman's York site, and we used to speak Divrei Torah in his memory. His sons used to come. And one son, the great-grandfather of the Chassid, taught me something that Mendel Gottesman used to say. It's a meritic quote. He used to say, we say in benching, Lo ra'iti tzadik ne'ezav u'mevakesh lechem. And he's Mendel Gottesman said, it's true. He said, but it's not true. We do see it. So he said, no, the pshat is, the Lo ra'iti, I didn't see the situation, and I didn't help. If I see it, I have to help. Putting the missing words. That's Mendel Gottesman.
It's a good way of looking at it. I always had trouble with that also.
Now you have
a good part.
Okay, Danny, don't forget. You got to find out that the lift, I have everything ready. No, that's the reality. At my age, I don't have the kayak to drive, and I don't at night, and I don't have the kayak to put up with the traffic. You got to. If someone has to pick us up and knows how to go, maybe to go the back way. There's a way to go through the gush. But who knows? Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, Tas Bedanya.